Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, 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 what you got to say? I say still plenty of hunting opportunities around the state. You're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Glorious weekend, February 1st and 2nd. February 2nd, the unofficial opening of spring in the parallel universe of Rack and Fin. What do? We go, tradition, man, we go sucker fishing. Yep, that's what we do. Been doing it for 100 years. It seems like that. But hey, man, that's our celebration. But still plenty of hunting opportunities. Winter bow still on in DMZ 7 through 15, 36, 41, 49, 50, and 51. Don't forget DMZs 9 and 13 are under these insipid antler point restrictions. Hopefully they are going away pretty soon. Go to page 34 in the digest for all the harvest figures. Permit shotgun in the same DMZs. Again, 9 and 13 antler point restrictions. Permit muzzleloader, same thing. In the same DMZs, go to page 35 for that, for the harvest figures there. Turkey permit application period is going on. It's going to run through February 22nd. The lottery is going to be held February 25th. Permit pickup starts February 26th. All awarded permits must be claimed by 11:59 on March 19th. Yeah, man, it's here before you know it. And leftover and unclaimed permits go over-the-counter sales starting 10 a.m. on Monday, the 24th of March. Hey, good luck today to all those youth and veterans on the special waterfowl hunt day for that. A lot of stuff going on. We're going to be talking waterfowl a little later on in the show. Really Jam Show coming up. Jim Hutchinson, Jr., Managing Editor, New Jersey, Delaware Bay, edition of Fisherman Magazine. Looks like Squeeze that gets fishermen off the sands, man. Beach access, is it threatened? Could be. And also, again, we're going to be talking Canada goose, snow goose, the avian flu, man. It is happening. So grab that cup, grab that rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin ready. Oh, also some news. Some news on the fishing front. OG Jigs, final segment. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Too much fun. Springtime is here. In the Rack and Fin Radio world.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Why? Why do we ignore the things that give us pause? That seem out of place? That don't feel right? The answer to why defines who we are. So if you see something, why do you say something?
I see safe for my friends.
For my community.
For my family.
For each other. Because all of this matters. We all have something worth protecting. So why do you see say? Report suspicious activity to local authorities. If you see something, say something.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Remember a couple of weeks ago we had Jim Hutchinson Jr., Managing Editor of the Mid-Atlantic and Delaware Bay issued of Fisherman Magazine, the number one fisheries newsman in the coastal U.S., and I'll even throw in Hawaii and Alaska, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands on that one, regarding what's going on with the stripers, with the fluke, what have you, with the sea bass, what have you. But we did mention access. There's something about access going on from the Jersey's DEP. Evidently, they're trying to establish restrictions to public access of tidal waters and adjacent shoreline to, quote unquote, protect wildlife species that appear on the New Jersey Endangered Species List. Okay, this is a wide open thing here. Hutch is, he is chomping at the bit to get into this. Caught him before the show season and the flea market season hits to talk about this for the next 10, 12, 50. If I have him for a couple of hours, I would do it. Here he is, without further ado, Jim Hutchinson, Jr., Managing Editor, New Jersey, Delaware Bay edition of Fisherman Magazine. Hutch, you are right, man. This is an insidious dealio. And by the way, listeners, wait. Get the February issue of the Fisherman Magazine. Just came out. Kicks it. Check out. This is one of his best editorials ever. La Tourette's Reign of Terror. He's a DEP. This is Jim. It's on page 3, the local section. And by the way, Hutch, great article. Fantastic by Bruce Litton on South Jersey largemouths, man.
Yeah,
Litton kicks it. And that guy's fishing. I'm through Mystic all the time. And I'm back on some of these small ponds. But I guess we're in different areas, whatever. This time of year, Hutch, I'm a Pemberton Lake man. But Hutch, let's get to it. What is this all about, my brother? Go.
So the title, La Tourette's Reign of Terror, is kind of related to what's inside it in terms of the public trust doctrine, right? That's a the public trust doctrine goes back to Roman times. And it's
hold it, hold it. He's saying that for my age, listeners, for my benefit. Go ahead.
No, if you understand the public trust doctrine, it started in in Roman times, and it established a rule that said the people, the public, has a right to tidal waters. So, I mean, that's the genesis of like our beach badge arguments, right? If you get on a beach that has beach badges in the summer, but you get to the water line before the badge checkers come on, the badge checker can't come to you at the high tide line and say, if you don't have a badge, get off. You're like, no, I'm at the high tide line. Once I get here, you can't throw me out.
I like that.
But what's happening is this public trust has always protected our access, whether you're walking or fishing. And obviously, it's very important for surf casters. But what this rule does is several things that are really scary. And for one, it actually restricts access below the mean low water line. So instead of taking from the dune to the ocean and being able to restrict that, now they're saying at the high tide line, high tide to low tide line, we're going to restrict you in that area too. And that's really kind of an egregious violation of the whole public trust doctrine, which is almost 1500 years old. New Jersey's public trust doctrine always recognized the public's access to tidal waters. However, a couple of years ago, some of us weren't paying attention to it. We just didn't see it. But in the legislature in Trenton, a bill by Kip Bateman and Robert Smith actually kind of tweaked the public trust doctrine and said, hey, the public trust doctrine has some limitations. And that's a loophole that this administration, Murphy and the DEP commissioner, Sean LaTourette, seem to be using as this loophole to drive a truck through. So mm-hmm. It's really frightening, and the public has until I think February 13th
right.
to provide comments. I've already signed on to a really great letter by George Brown, the New Jersey Beach Buggy Association, JCA,
right.
Berkeley Striper Club, a few others. But I would encourage folks to read this. And if you don't pick up the February edition, you can find my editorial online. But just real quick, man, this rule, as it's written, to protect tidal areas, to protect threatened or endangered species. One scary component of this rule is it wants to protect these areas where a threatened or endangered species might possibly show up.
Possibly. Right? That's why I was saying it earlier. It's a wide open thing, man. Interpretation's wide open.
Correct. So we're already, as surfcasters, dealing with this issue with piping plovers or habitat, like vegetation, like the beech amaranth. So beech amaranth, this threatened species of vegetation, if that appears on the beach, they rope it off and say you can't access this. Okay, well, I see it there. I got to stay away from it.
Yeah.
This is now saying, well, if something, we know that this vegetation could show up here at some point, so we're just going to restrict it. We know that a piping plover could nest here, so we're going to close it. When you set this precedent, can you imagine in the hands of somebody else? There's not a lot of trust for the Murphy administration now for public access, public comment, public participation. Imagine mm-hmm. if it was 10 times worse. So what they're doing now really threatens access.
But, Hutch, I know Murphy's thing is vehemently anti-hunting, vehemently anti-gun, and surreptitiously, are they anti-fishing as well, it seems? Like this over, the hell with those fishermen. Bunch of drunks. And it just seems crazy to me. This is beyond overreach.
Shadows lurk in the hearts of men. How does that line go from a shadow? The evil in the hearts of men. I don't know what Governor Murphy's MO is. What I do know is they have completely disregarded angler input, and they have made sure that there's not a lot of blowback from the recreational community doing a lot of this stuff without any public input. For example, we've talked about it before, where the New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council has been missing two members of the public going back 5 years because Murphy just didn't fill the slots. Now, I wrote this editorial based on a New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council meeting in January when the DEP endangered species folks gave a presentation to the New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council, right? For the very first time, them about what this new access rule was going to be. Now, the Marine Fisheries Council represents commercial and recreational stakeholders, recreational and commercial fishermen. This was the first time the council had ever heard this presentation. And then they were given 35 days or something like that to respond. It's like, well, wait a minute. We don't even meet again until March. This is unfair. So the discussion at the council in January went on for an hour. And then it was really funny because at the end, after all these concerns and questions were brought up, the council voted to send the entire hour-long discussion comment to the NJDEP. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But again, that just shows you. So you asked the question about Governor Murphy. I don't know what's really in his heart, but he sure as heck has done a great job of making sure that the anglers do not get much of a public voice and are kept mainly in the dark. That's the God's honest truth.
And I understand Sean LaTourette's thing. He's, you know, jump, you know, and how high, you know, whatever. He's done what he's told. We get that. But it's...
I don't know. I guess so. You know, but
yeah. That's my thing.
The DEP has I feel bad for friends of mine who work in the Division of Fish and Wildlife.
I love it. The Division. Oh, well, you can't say... I said, what happened? We were told we can't say Division because there is no... What?
Yeah, okay. Well, with 10 months to go, I imagine the Division of Fish and Wildlife will return. But I think by removing Division, they did two things. I think that La Tourette's vision was Division is a scary word and it's very bad because we don't want to be divisive. By the same token, removing Division also took away the autonomy, much of the autonomy that would have existed in Fish and Wildlife. So these folks do what they're told. And I don't know, Commissioner La Tourette seems more concerned with his great big park up in Jersey City. And with 10 months to go, it sure seems like they want to rewrite some code to really, you know. And let's not forget, too, that Sean LaTourette, before he became DEP commissioner, was an environmental lawyer. So if you create a whole new set of access guidelines that are hard to navigate, boy, you've got a good business when you go back to private practice next year, don't you?
Yeah, he's no dummy. Listeners, written comments may be submitted electronically by February 13th at www.nj.gov/DEP/rules/comments or in hard copy. Again, go to Fisherman Magazine, www.thefisherman.com for all the information. Let's check out Hutch's editorial log, La Tourette's Reign of Terror on page 3. Hutch diving into this, peeling back the onion. This must one. I want to know off the air when you're running for governor. You can tell me on that one. But two, when you're peeling back the onion on this, how insidious is this?
It's frightening. There's some subtle change. Look, the DEP's goal is specifically to protect natural resources and ensure that threatened or endangered species are not impacted negatively. Mm-hmm. Then there's some things that you can do to kind of tweak this. That's one thing they should specifically state in this rule, that its sole purpose is directly limited to protecting natural resources. That's for one. It doesn't really say that. It ends up being really mealy-mouthed. The other thing is they should suspend this.
mealy-mouthed. I love that, Hutch.
They should suspend this for now, at least for several months, and get stakeholders involved. Because stakeholders didn't know about this until this year. Right. So now you've got a public comment that's due February 13th. They can make the rule then anytime after that. And I don't even know how concerned they are actually with public comment. Typically, public comment means you get something and then you send somebody a receipt back saying, hey, we got it. Yep. And we're going to measure it. We're going to think about it.
Yep.
But there's been no real stakeholder session. It's all been done relatively in the dark, like I said, with the Marine Fisheries Council. First time they heard about it in January.
Hutch, I'm wondering surf as in S-E-R-F, not S-U-R-F, how they look at it. What do you think? I don't know. That's just me. Hutch, I've been around longer than I taught Moses how to use a cast net if you get my drift to see a galley, wherever it was. But this is crazy. This is just, it's so wide open. It's crazy.
It's very concerning. It's extremely concerning. And I think every member of the public should be concerned because, you know, when they gave their presentation at the council, there was a slideshow presentation, and this is available online. I think if you go to the story that I wrote at thefisherman.com and find this, You'll see the links to the presentation. But the presentation had these photos of things that are bad. And walking on the beach, look at this. This is bad. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I want you to think about this. You work for the state, I understand. But walking on the beach is what drives the economy at the Jersey Shore. That's the whole basis of all that money going into Trenton. When you show a screen that says, look at this, walking on the beach is bad. No, it's not bad. What's wrong with you? That's the whole purpose of the public trust doctrine. So now identifying walking on the beach or fishing or you know, rafting up, you know, that's been a major concern for the division as well, is that some of these islands, you know, these mystery islands, Horseshoe Island, Tucker's Island, which appears and doesn't appear. People raft up on these locations.
Tucker's was a fun place back in my heyday. Whoa, hey.
Oh, yeah, I remember. But, you know, this gives the DEP the authority to now say, in some of these areas where I have friends that anchor up in 3 feet of water just to kind of hang out. Well, now that's so close to little islands and sedges that the DEP could all of a sudden restrict access there. So, you know, you can't walk around in that mud. You can't walk around on those, you know, it really threatens access. And I think all members of the public should be really ticked off about this.
We're up against a break here, Jim, but let me run this by you. I mean, say this, they get this going. The next administration, you know, the magnet, listeners, Hutch was with the RFA for what, 5, 6, 7, I mean, just knows the magnetizations of government, federal, say whatever. Jim, can this, say they pass, this gets through. Can it ever be rescinded or modified or what? Or is this once it's etched in stone? Pardon the pun.
No, I think this can get, because it's rulemaking, I think it can be rescinded. But, you know, I don't even know how long this will take. You know, every time I go to the division, the Marine Fisheries Council meeting, I ask about speckled trout. Speckled trout has been in the rulemaking process to separate it from weak fish for 5 years.
Yeah.
It's still not there yet. Some rules in Trenton get passed overnight, and other rules have to go through the rulemaking process, and they might be done sometime in 2030, right? I can't figure all that out, you know. But what really is concerning to me is the Smith-Bateman bill from a couple of years back that said public trust doctrine has limitations. That was scary.
Well,
that's got to be legislated back.
Yeah, Kip Bateman up there in Somerset, he was a wolf in sheep's clothing, man. In my opinion, my opinion only. Well, Hutch, listen, up against a hard break. Congratulations on the Birds, little brother. They still have one game to go.
And then
don't skirt around the question, Hutch, that I asked you earlier. I just put it in there. When are you running for governor?
No. Too many skeletons in his closet, my friend.
I remember one guy, I don't want to say who it was, but very high up there. He says, when are you running for governor? Or whatever. He says, man, I don't have skeletons. I got a whole boneyard in my closet, man. So, you know, I think you know what we're talking about. You don't want to know about this. Well, Hutch, thanks for the insight here on Rack and Fin Radio. Hey, Jim, 29 days to go, man. Where are you going to be March 1st? You going to be doing the Stripers?
No, March 1st, I'm going to be at the Atlantic City Boat Show. I'm there every year on March 1st.
Oh, wait. I think I'm supposed to be there. Am I supposed to be there? I'll be there. I'll see you there, Hutch. Listen, here's the thing. Okay, just a little off the side, just to load in. Hutch has to leave real fast. February 2nd, unofficial spring opener of Rack and Fin Radio. We go white sucker fishing. That's what we do. We get not the winter trout, not the open water pickerel. What I like my favorite. Nope. We go sucker fishing. So how's that, Hutch?
We eat them?
In the spring, yeah. It's predicated on the water. The only way to really do it, Jim, you got to make fish cakes. They have that real fine hair bone structure. So we fillet them and just grind them up, man. Little potato flakes in there. Garlic, of course. Little garlic flakes. And whoa, Jim. Oh, it gets. Ah, it's so good. Must have ice cold brewskis with it, though.
I'll keep my fluke fillets. Thank you very much.
Well, Hutch, thanks for joining us again. Listeners, get involved with this. Democracy is not a spectator sport. This is very important, and you have until February 13th. And you can go to thefisherman.com for more information on how to make the comment, either written or electronic. Jim, thanks for joining us. How's the lovely Michelle and Samantha?
Good. All geared up for next Sunday. So that's the big thing. I go to the Palmyra show next Sunday, then it's back home with the family and hoping for the best. Go Birds.
Somebody told me you had a suite at the Montcalm there in on Bourbon Street. You're going to be in New Orleans.
I don't have enough money in my account to get a suite in Chatsworth. No, thank you.
Jim, take care. Thanks for joining us on Rock and Finch. Share the knowledge. Appreciate it. Be safe, brother. I'll see you with the shows.
God bless. See you later.
Yeah, get involved. Way long on that segment. Coming back, we're talking avian flu as it pertains to Canada and snow geese. Jersey wildlife pathologist, Pat Conley. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. For complete contest rules, visit WPGTalkRadio.com. Bullet points.
I'm Evan Brown. Well, there's a new president. He is also an old president. He also gets a lot of high marks from Second Amendment advocates. And with President Trump and his fellow Republicans in control of Congress, up again comes the issue of carry rights. Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie has already introduced a bill for nationwide permitless carry. Massie says every state ought to be like Kentucky, where law-abiding citizens should be able to acquire, possess, and carry firearms without a need for a permit or a license. The bill would make it unlawful for states or local governments to require permits or licenses, or to instill any obstacle to a person wishing to exercise those rights, provided they aren't precluded from doing so, such as by having a criminal record. It's not the first time Republicans have tried nationalizing carry rights, but it's not yet known if this proposed law could get enough votes. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app.
Here we go, look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We got a February 1st and 2nd again. And early Happy New Year, man. Early Happy New Year coming up. Striper season. It's going to open March 1st. Still plenty of hunting going on. Hey, on the waterfowl front. Light geese goes till February 15th, and that's a greater and lesser snow in the Ross's geese, 25 singly or in aggregate. Now, February 17th to April 5th, special permit, whatever, no big deal, is the conservation order hunt for the light geese. No limit electronic calls and the whole nine yards. Canada Goose special season is on now. It's going to run through February 15th, and the limit is 5. Go to page, let's see, in the digest, whatever, in the wild in the waterfowl section. They're going to have the map for the special Canada Goose zone. Speaking of geese, now that avian flu, I mentioned several weeks ago, we're going to have this state wildlife pathologist on to discuss it. It's knocking off birds, Pennsylvania, around the country now. Snow geese and Canada geese especially, it's called the avian influenza, HPAI, I guess, is the term they're using for it. Join us online right now, very, very special guest, going to bang rocks again. Canada goosey, man, the snow goose season, very popular here. They are finding dead birds here and there. It's Pat Connolly, the state wildlife pathologist, DEP's Fish and Wildlife. Join us on the line right now to discuss this avian bird flu, its impact on flocks, respective long-term impact on flocks. Can it be treated? Is it transferable? And more importantly, from the Rack and Fin Radio, and how's it affect the hunting situation? Pat Connolly, thanks for joining us on Rock and Fin and making the time. I know it was a while. Had to get everything fleshed out with the press office, whatever. But thanks again for joining us, man.
No, thank you for having me. So, so we are tracking an outbreak of avian influenza in the state right now. The best way of putting it is probably a resurgence. This is an issue that's been going on really dating back to about late 2021, early 2022. It's particularly carried by waterfowl. And so during the migratory seasons, we can see cases of this pop up in the state. This year, more cases than last year, but overall not a horrible outbreak for our area, particularly for New Jersey. Pennsylvania has had higher caseloads. But yes, to get to your question, it can be transmitted to humans,
whoa,
risk is low. And so I think there's a lot of kind of common sense precautions that waterfowl hunters can take so that you can continue hunting and feel safe. But, you know, read those guidelines, look at the resources that the state has put out, look at the resources that USDA has put out on some of those easy ways that you can keep yourself take those precautions and continue doing what you want to do this year.
Yeah, this is real fast. Go to the podcast. I just want to shoot this out. nj.gov/H5N1. Okay, for more information on the avian influenza and research or whatever. But Pat, now can it be? I guess you cut your finger. You're cleaning the birds or whatever. What about consuming? Like you don't know there's birds. In fact, and you now can it be passed by eating the meat?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if there's a case in a human of that, certainly not in the United States, maybe somewhere globally where that has happened, but the possibility is certainly there. That's a common way that we see it transmitted to a lot of our other wildlife in the state. For example, raptors, bald eagles, they consume these sick or deceased infected geese. They can pick it up. So the risk for humans is there as well. And so for that reason, it's recommended to cook waterfowl that you harvest now to an internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit. And that internal temperature will be enough to kill the virus, and you could safely consume the meat.
Okay, join us on the Rack and Fin line this morning is Pat Conley. He is the New Jersey State Wildlife Pathologist, DEP's Fish and Wildlife, also a wildlife veterinarian. And we discussed off the air, Pat, I mean, you cover it all, right? Amphibians, birds, the whole nine yards, correct?
Yeah, pretty much anything terrestrial. It's under my jurisdiction here in the state.
Before we get back to the avian flu, I have a couple more questions. Just have to ask you this on a personal, professional basis. From when you were a youngster, were you fascinated with animals, pathology? How'd you get into that? That's a one pretty demanding course. I mean, to take, no?
Yeah, I've always had an interest in wildlife and the outdoors going through college, developing an interest in health and infectious diseases. It was just a good combination, combining that interest and interest in medicine with interest in wild animals.
I want to thank you for your service, especially working on this. Okay, Pat, nuts and bolts here. Where did this avian flu, this bird flu, come from? Viral or what? How's it passed on? How's it transmitted? Bird feeders, waterfowl. Like, for example, the other day, I happened to be running through part of Monmouth, the Middlesex County, and Somerset, the Millstone River. Geese everywhere. Millions of geese lying there. The whole nine. How was it? Where did it come from? And how was it transmitted?
So there are a lot of avian influenza viruses, different strains. They're naturally occurring viruses that circulated in wild waterfowl. They started out in Asia and Europe, and then in the mid-2010s, they popped up in North America. After 2016, we didn't see it much, and then it came back in 2021. The particular strain of, you said it earlier, HPAI, it means highly pathogenic avian influenza, and that has come back kind of with a bit more of a vengeance and really run through our wild bird populations in North America, but particularly the waterfowl. Waterfowl carry these viruses, particularly the high path version that we're seeing now and what we can assume is causing death of wild birds in the state right now. That one can cause variable clinical signs in wild birds. And so this is why we just put those precautions out, particularly for hunters. Some birds will have sudden death, clinical signs, and neurological issues. And you may see birds with a twisted neck, circling, uncoordinated, almost a zombie-like people state. But other birds can be carriers and not showing any outward signs. And so obviously the first recommendation we always make to waterfowl hunters, if you're out and you see sick birds, obviously, that's not a bird that you should harvest. And if you do see those sick birds, please call the DEP hotline, make that report, help us track where these cases are occurring. But the other thing is, because there's that chance for carrier and a snow goose or a Canada goose, for example, that may be infected but not showing outward signs, it may look like a perfectly healthy animal.
Mm-hmm.
Taking those precautions, wearing gloves, when you're handling the animal and when you're dressing it. Always dress in the field. Don't bring them back home to keep that potential virus on the landscape rather than bringing it into your home. Wear a mask. N95 is the best. Wash your hands and arms with soap and water after handling the animals. Keep in mind how you're disposing of those gloves and other masks mm-hmm. and whatnot that you wore. Put it in a bag. Bag it up. Put it in a trash can that's not going to be accessible by children or pets at home. Keep a separate pair of shoes. Wear rubber boots out into the field. Clean them when you get before you're leaving. The best thing to use. What's good about the avian influenza virus is it's easily disinfected by a lot of common household disinfectants. And so the best one is bleach, dilute bleach. You can just use about a third a cup of bleach and mix that with a gallon of water. But other things like Pine Sol are also going to be highly effective. And so just disinfect rubber boots, anything that you use handling the animals. And another thing I would just say, keep in mind, right, that our canine companions going out and hunting with you guys, keep them in mind too. The similar to humans, the risk to dogs is also low, but that risk is there. And so just be mindful of the dog. Don't allow them to retrieve sick animals. Be mindful if there's carcasses on the landscape to keep your dog away from those carcasses. And the biggest thing too, don't feed your dog raw meat from any waterfowl you harvest for the time being.
Okay, joining us on the line is Pat Conley, New Jersey State wildlife pathologist. Topic is the avian flu affecting Canada and snow geese particularly. Well, Pat, before I let you go, two questions right off the bat. One, how does it go from one goose to another?
So there is a lot of different ways that it can. The two biggest are probably going to be either direct contact. And so think of how we can give a flu to another human. Geese in close contact, respiratory secretions, they're going to be able to transmit it that way. Mucus, other things that they're coughing up. We can also see it, though, spread through the environment. And so geese can be shed in their feces.
There you go.
They contaminate water bodies. Mm-hmm. Other animals that are coming in, spending time in that water, drinking, consuming food, they can then pick up that virus on the landscape as well. And so direct contact as well as indirect.
Okay, Pat, last question before I let you go here. Now, consuming, say you have, will it be in the meat if you consume or you get the avian flu? What are the symptoms and how do you treat it? Don't drink Pine Sol, listeners. Trust me on that. But yeah, or bleach, although Clorox can clean anything, man. I had mold in my basement once. Anyway, but on a serious note, Pat, what happens if a human does contract a disease? What's the dealio?
Yeah, so I would say for the average, for one, I think there's a lot of unknowns with this still, but for the most part, normal a healthy adult without significant underlying conditions, it's probably going to be a mild illness. But for a subset of people globally, we've seen severe infections in children. We've seen severe infections in the elderly. Unfortunately, a month or so ago here in the United States, we had the first an older gentleman passed away due to avian influenza. For the most part, people who have gotten severe infections and outward signs, they've been working with poultry. Infection from wild bird is going to be lower. You think about people working with poultry, they're going to be in a confined environment. It's going to be extremely dusty. They're going to be inhaling a lot of particles. Mm. But the signs that you guys are going to want to look for in yourselves, it could be, I would say, nonspecific, but flu-like symptoms is probably going to be the most common, right? Feeling lethargic, maybe some respiratory signs, fever, sweating in the night. Any flu-like symptoms, get checked out, and your doctor can refer you to testing if there seems like there may have been an exposure and you're not testing positive for some of the more common respiratory illnesses going around, like the regular flu or COVID.
Okay, Conley, I lied to you. One more question. Will this eventually play itself out? Will it just go away, or can it just go through the summer? Is it ongoing?
So it's hard to say. But historically, what we have seen is that, yes, with the conclusion of the winter and bird and waterfowl heading back north, cases will dissipate. But again, once waterfowl with the fall migration, we may start seeing cases again. And so I think that's the hope, and that's what we expect, that over time this will dissipate, waterfowl migration will pick back up again, and cases will stop for the time being. I could give you an example. We had a smaller, more localized outbreak last year, primarily involving sea ducks in the Long Beach Island area.
Mm-hmm. Remember that,
that started up in about March, and by mid to late April, we were no longer seeing cases anymore. This year, we're having a more widespread resurgence, primarily involving snow geese and Canada geese. We're at just over 500 suspect cases statewide, and we're really seeing cases kind of statewide at this point, but really with a focus on snow geese in the counties and areas along the Delaware River and in the marshes along the Delaware Bay. But we're really seeing it pick up the past week and a half or so in Canada geese, and they're really distributed across yeah. the state.
Yeah, this just pay attention to that. Pat, thanks for joining us. Up against a hard break, Pat Conley, New Jersey State wildlife pathologist. Talking about the avian flu, you can go to the Rack and Fin Radio podcast. They're going to post the podcast usually around noon. Today's Saturday, and then it's Apple, Spotify, whatever. Pat, thanks for joining us. Really honor having you on Rack and Fin. Good luck in your position, and Jersey is a wild place, as you know, man. Wild with wildlife.
Right. Well, yeah, thank you for having me. And, yeah, everybody, just stay safe. Have fun out there. And give us a call if you see anything unusual.
You got it, Pat. You take care, brother. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
He's a great guy. Wildlife veterinarian. Holy smokes. That is something. Whew. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. My God.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
I'm Deborah Valentine. Medical transport jet erupted into a ball of flames, crashing into a Philadelphia neighborhood Friday evening. All six people aboard are presumed dead. Aboard were six Mexican nationals, including four crew members, a young medical patient, and her mother. Six structures and six vehicles were set on fire. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro.
Mayor preaches about one Philly. She talks about a unified approach to governing every day. What you're seeing here is a unified response to an awful aviation disaster.
Officials say of six people taken to Temple University Hospital, three remain hospitalized. The FAA and NTSB are investigating. Hamas has released three hostages from Gaza, including Israeli-American Keith Siegel. All three have arrived in Israel in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. For today, windy and cooler with clouds giving way to some sun with a high of 40. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy skies and colder conditions with a low of 18. For tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun with a high of 40. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low 31. On Monday, variable cloudiness, breezy conditions with a high of 57. I'm AccuWeather's Caitlin Lawrence on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Just last weekend, last Saturday, rocking and rolling time there at resorts at the George Poveromo Saltwater Sportsman Seminar Series. I just had rolling reviews all over. Hey, man, we were catching some 6 and 7 inch yellow perch up there in the Poconos through the ice, baby. Couldn't make it. Previous engagement up there, my lovely Dee Marie, way up there in the mountains. But I have George on the line right now. George, does Jersey have the best crew of fishermen and female anglers, or what?
You're never going to get an argument from me about that. It is the most intense, fun-oriented crowd ever. We always look forward to getting up to Jersey, and then also when we shoot TV episodes, we try to at least get a Jersey episode in once a season, you know, to show Give Jersey Our Love. And just another really super seminar series with a great, lively, rambunctious.
Yeah, yeah. George, I got calls from a, man, I'm trying. So I finally turn the phone, and Demery says, "What's?" As we're pulling up, you know, the five or six inch parachute through the hole. I said, "Babe," I said, "George and that crewman, they really, really lit it on fire. It's like a hydrogen bomb went off, man. You guys really rocked it. Nicky on the chefs. Hey, you had Captain Wayne Cicero in there. I mean, holy God, George.
Well, we had some of the heavyweights, as always. And I made a mention to the crowd that Tom P. with Rack and Finn sends his regards. And while you were catching those 6-7-inch perch, we were eating ham sandwiches in the green room that were bigger than the perch you were catching.
Well, George, let me tell you something. Anybody really can catch, say, a 400-pound blue, 80-pound white, 60-pound whatever. But to get a 6 or 7 inch perch through 6-8 inches of ice, hey George, that's a challenge, man. I even had one that was 4.5 inches. I measured it. Not bad, huh?
That's called finesse fishing.
There you go, George. The tenor, though. I mean, people are enthusiastic whenever you come to town. You have the best of the best of the Jersey crew there. You have national guys as well. George, how do you see the fishing industry? As you know, you have what, 8 shows on your schedule, 8 seminars. Enthusiasm, even with all the regulations and this. I just read, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, George, they want to stop fishing for 50 species off the Florida coast. Noah, what's that all about?
We're fighting that big time.
Where did this come from?
It's for the red snapper, the further protective, which is, at one point was overfished, but 10 years, they rebounded so much that they're not... They're everywhere. You can't even grouper fish anymore.
Yeah.
And so what they're planning on doing is closing the bottom pretty much from parts of Georgia down to Central Florida.
Jeez.
Just to let them rebound even more. But that's going to lose big time. And CCA Florida, they're all it's just complete nonsense because the stocks are very, very, very healthy. It's just bizarre.
And George, thank God they backed off finally on that asinine rule with the ten knot limit or whatever. Was that crazy or what, George? Who are these people?
It's Noah is in there doing a whole bunch of that stuff. And fortunately, I'm on the board of ASA, American Sport Fish Association, which is really down and dirty in fighting all this. And the battle to close the bottom is going to be hopefully knocked out. But hey, if not, what we're going to do is we're going to come up to the Poconos, do some perch fishing with you. How about that?
Hey man, I'll guide you. I got some little spots there, man, George. If I can catch them, anybody can. Hey George, listen.
Now, were you on Lake Wallenpaupack?
No, man, that's serious big stuff. I don't handle big stuff through the ice, man. Are you kidding me, Poveromo? Come on, I like them little. You don't have to gut them. Just cut the heads off, throw them in the pan. Well, George, listen, on a more serious note, the Jersey saltwater fishing, inshore, offshore, it's pretty much second to none. For our short amount of length of coast side, I mean, we have it all here, man.
I always said, people ask me, if you had to move out of South Florida, if somebody put a gun in your head, where are you going to go? And you think they're going to answer like Central Florida or West Coast of Florida. I always tell them, I said, the answer is going to surprise you. It's going to be New Jersey. They look at me like I landed from outer space. What? I said, they have the best fishing for fluke, striped bass, togging.
Yeah.
They've got the deer short tunas, the canyon tunas. And they had a short season, but everything goes up off impressive fashion.
It was a wild tile time as well. But listen, you notice George's metaphor here? Jersey, Italian is where it's at. Put a gun to my head. I mean, George, it can't get any better than that.
well, that's always joke around. If people wonder, my God, why do they love you so much in Jersey? And I finally realized, with an Italian last name, they think I'm from Jersey. They don't know I'm from Miami.
Well, George, what's it look like real fast? I know he is on the road. He's on the road like crazy. George, now real fast, what shows upcoming do you got? What do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
Are you talking about on television?
On TV, on the World of Saltwater Fishing with Georgie P.
Well, this Sunday, we've got Patch Reef fishing at a marathon in the Florida Keys. We've got El Salvador, Central America. We have a two-part series there. We did an offshore, which is totally incredible.
Wow.
Big dolphin tunas. We've got blue marlin. And then the second half is the inshore, where we go after roosterfish. That's the two-part episode coming up there. We got the Azores, which is Portugal, coming up soon in the mix.
Wait, is that Damn the Blue Marlin or Blue Marlin Be Damned or something like that?
That's the name of it. Blue Marlin Be Damned. And they don't know what they're sitting on. They got the most incredible tuna fishery. And I said, once the Jersey people see that, they're going to be going over there by the flying. They're going to charter planes to get there.
And after that, what do you got?
Then we got a couple more Keys episodes. And, then we'll wrap up our season. We're going to make 13 episodes. And then we got to get the dust off of us and get back in April and start filming again for 2026.
Well, George, you had Tommy Titanic Todd Daffin on, correct?
Oh, he never misses. Yeah. He's just a genuinely nice guy.
Yep.
And they show you Jersey's strength. On our TV series, every time we do a Jersey show, when we get our ratings back, Jersey was always the most watched episode. Now, at the end of this quarter, when we get our ratings back, I'm curious, because I know once we air, we put the shows on my YouTube channel, George Pogrom on TV.
Yeah.
And the Jersey talk show I did with Tom is up to 12,000 views already.
Yeah.
Posted. So he's running away with it on YouTube. It's just something about the Jersey crowd. We all just click together, you know?
George, you know what I mean? I've got to travel a lot of places and fish a lot of places. And still people say, Tom, why do you stay in New Jersey, Pags? I said, we have it all here. It may not be the greatest trout or the greatest. All together, George. We have it. We have it here. Well, George, thanks for taking some time for us on our travel safe little brother, right? Hey, how's Edie doing?
Oh, she's fine. She's on the plane now with Jim and Harry Vernon. They're flying to Alabama. They get ready for a Mobile seminar. And I'm on the road right now driving here with Rob the Swede Green. So we're all getting Green. In Alabama, getting ready to do our thing there, you know?
Hey, you get to Alabama, get to Foley, Gulf Shores, whatever. Mikey's Seafood, the fried pickles and the red. Oh, George, I'll tell you, make your tongue slap your brains out, brother. Hey, you be good, man. We'll see you soon.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Thank you, brother. He is indeed an icon. See, icon, when you think of icon, you think of old. Like me, old. He's, he's pretty close to the same age. He may be a couple of years younger than me, but, man, he is just on the go. Hey, coming up, some breaking news on the Bucktail front. Grab that cup, grab that bowl. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, first it was the pandemic, then a strike, now the wildfires. Hear the struggle for Hollywood TV and film crews. Also, residents in a Milwaukee suburb who are fed up with construction traffic have found someone to complain to, but he's not human. Plus, remote workers who find ways to secretly take three-day weekends. And a food bank in upstate New York deals with a unique donation. That and more on This Weekend.
This morning at 6 on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, I'm your mountain bike. Been a minute since we hit the trail. Why not roll me over to Goodwill? Donating me helps Goodwill's mission to provide career training and support services right here in the community. And that keeps us all moving. Donate today. On your left. To find your nearest Goodwill locations and to learn more about our mission, please visit goodwill.org. Goodwill, where your things start new lives.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, wrapping it up this first day of February 2025. Hey, man, tomorrow, like I said, Groundhog Day, unofficial spring in the parallel universe of Rack and Fin. Hey, some great breaking news on the saltwater fishing front, inshore, especially when it comes to fluke and bass. New lures / old lures back on the market under the OG label. As in, well, I'll have a special guest patiently waiting on a line to describe it right now. But to just give us a little ligature to this wrapping up segment here, SNS Bucktails, way back when, 2013-14, roared onto the market with the rattle tail, went through some changes, expanded huge. Now, was then with another company of sort of working. Make a long story short, Stanley Gola, the Ayatollah of Flucarola, Striperola, and Tagarolo. Tagarolo, rather, is back. OG Jigs. He's on the line right now. Some exciting news. I've known Stan for many years. His energy knows no bounds. His creativity knows no bounds. And he is one fishing mother, if you get my... I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars this guy and his crew have won in the Fluke Tournament. Stan, congratulations. How you doing, brother?
Good, Tom. How are you, sir?
Good. Well, we'll get to OG Jigs in a minute, but congratulations on soon to be a granddaddy again, and to Stosh... Stanley, is that Stanley III, his job, creativity, his logo is nothing short of fantastic. I'm sure he's going to do great in that creative management job that he has. Stan, I mean, Everything seems to be firing on all cylinders. Go into OG Jigs. You were with, mentioned S&S Bucktails way back when, the Mad Manus connection. It is now back to ground zero, the origin, Stanley Gola. Go into it, little brother.
Hey, so what I basically decided was, it was in my best interest to bring things back to America, made in the USA, go back to the old designs. Wasn't really happy with what I was seeing, what I was receiving, so I decided to pull back and restart the company the way it started.
Again, Stan, back to the roots. Listen, I met this gentleman. I met the store's long defunct, the Sportsman Center, Route 130 in Bordentown. He had a clipboard in his hand, a pencil in his ear, ready to take orders with some samples. And Stan, he had a few, I would say, growing pains because your design, your innovation with the rattles in there really kicked off. And Stan, I got to the point, I remember telling my lovely Dee Marie, Mary, Mother of God, this guy's everywhere. And Stan, it got so huge. Now it's just for your own business sanity, coming back to the root base is a great thing.
Yeah. I'm not going to go back to, where we had it with, 250, 300 shops.
That was crazy, man.
I'm not looking to do that. I'm going to keep it smaller. Select shops will have it. They'll benefit from being the ones that are carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I'm going to approach it.
Well, Stanley, you're paring down your massive SKU lineup, correct? So let's go. We only have a few minutes before we close it out, Stosh. Let's go to what your basics. What are you going to be offering?
The rattletail, of course. The big eye. The filet.
Oh, that filet. The filet with the silicone skirts, baby.
The big eye head. And, of course, I'm going to keep the Raging Rattler because that's what I fish 95% of the time. And then I'll have the Bass Bucktails. I'll have three. I'll have a Smiling Bill, a regular Rock Hopper, and the Pro, and, of course, the Blackfish Jigs.
Sam, I was going to say, whoa. You can't leave that alone. You started that thing. You got it going. Now, will it be the White Chin? Are you going to add another series or not?
It'll be the White Chin, and then we have a new one coming out in about 2 weeks, a new design.
Oh, boy. Just in time for the late winter. So, Stan, peace of mind now in that you're going to have total control once again, correct? Quality control, components, et cetera?
Hands-on, me, couple of my guys, that's it.
Let me ask you, on a personal yet professional basis, Gola, when getting sold by this much bigger company with the imports and the whole bit, when did you feel that you were losing touch? You were losing the Gola influence?
Probably about 3 months after I started it.
No!
That's not who I am. You know me, Tom.
Yeah.
I want to watch everything. I want to make sure everything's proper. And when you do it like that, you can. It's just the way it is.
Listen, there's nothing, nothing came out of Gola's place unless it was met his your standards are beyond strict. So, well, good luck, man. This sounds pretty exciting. So, figure shops in Jersey, what, a dozen more? But I know you're in Long Island. I know you're in Connecticut. I know you're down in Maryland. You got to pare it down, man.
There'll probably be only, honestly, best guess, 5 to 6 shops in New Jersey. That'll be it.
Okay, say now, no online order, correct? You have to go to a dealer. What's the dealio?
Yes, go to a dealer. Or see me next year at the shows, because I won't be doing any this year.
You're a little bit of a break for the goal, man. Not bad.
Yeah, I need a break. So.
Okay, Stan, hey, good luck. Great luck with the new venture. I know it's going to be a success. You started from ground zero. You busted it wide open, back to ground zero. Again, you are in total control, Gola. Hey, listen, man.
Yep.
Yeah, those. Just a memory here. It was about 10 years ago, the passing of Big Stosh, Stanley Gola, the original S at SNS. I call him the Polish Picasso. His painting color combinations, just unbelievable. Stan, those outrageous colors, you're still going to have more of those, you know, going to be integrated in there?
Yeah, sure. They'll be in there.
Your dad, 100%. Stosh, your dad, he said, Tom, what do you think? I'm looking at this thing. I'm Abba, Abba, Abba. I said, I don't want to fish with that. I want to put it in a shadow box.
Oh, God.
Okay, be safe on the road there, Gully. You take care. Best to everybody.
Thanks, Tom. You as well.
See you, man.
All right, buddy.
Back in the mix on his own. So what happens sometimes with companies, and always, you know, people ask me, you know, hey, I said, this is what you do. You build a company up. You build it up. H.D. Wood, the famous Dick Wood, the great Dick Wood, the unbelievable Dick Wood, building up companies to where a point where someone wants to buy it, and then you start over. You see improvements that can be made. Again, when you get that big, when you get that, you just sort of lose control, if you will. It's great to see Stan OG. It stands for, listen, I didn't get into it now. I'll get into it now. Stanley gave it the okay. Original gangster. I don't know where he came up with that one. I guess the original rattletail, so he's the original gangster. But I'll tell you, for Fluke, for Tog, for Stripers, that's smiling Bill, too. Just can't beat it. Hey, that is over for this week on Rock and Fin Radio. February, man. Hey, like I said, let's see. We're looking at 29 days till the opening of the Striper season. An early Happy New Year. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Get out and enjoy. Still plenty of hunting to be had. Open water fishing. The ice is receding. Some good, good early season bass coming up, especially in South and Central Jersey. And also the pickerel are always pissed off. You notice that? They are just always ready to. And, of course, the white perch. Ooh, grass shrimp and bloods if you can find them. Again, see you next week, Rack and Fin Radio.